This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Speaking of going deep, we bring in Dieter Kurtenbach, who is a columnist for the San Jose Mercury News and the Bay Area News Group in general. Going to cover a number of things, but I want to bring you into the conversation we've just been having, Dieter, because I do think it plays into the Kyler Murray situation, which I know you wrote about this week. And just in general, the way we've seen this offseason play out between the apparent reticence to spend big money on free agents and the sort of back and forth with trying to creatively come up with a way to pay Kyler Murray enough to make him play the sport. Do you think this is a problem, that the salary situation, the current free agent situation that developed last offseason and this, do you think this is headed for a confrontation, maybe a strike, a work stoppage of some kind down the road?
Well, 1,000%. I'd be shocked that if in 2021, just when I think the CBA expires, there's not a full year work stoppage.
Wow.
Just full stop. Everybody seems to know that this is coming. The issues that baseball has had are not new. They've just become exacerbated since the last CBA. They did not deal with their problems last time around. And that to their benefit, because they didn't have a massive work stoppage. It was very amicable. But that is not going to be the case going forward. You guys were mentioning, I was listening before, I got on here, that Mike Trout wouldn't be recognized in the street. Kenneth Faried, the guy who just got bought out from the Nets, has a higher Q rating than Mike Trout right now.
Wow.
That is a straight-up fact.
How is that even possible? It is a fact.
It's incredible to me. Like, what are we talking about here? Mike Trout, arguably one of the 10 greatest baseball players of all time, at least statistically. Mm-hmm. We don't feel it the same way, but statistically, he stands up with anybody, has a lower Q rating than a guy who just got bought out by the Brooklyn Nets and was barely playing. Dreadlocks have nothing to do with that. That has to do with a major issue with baseball. Add in the Kyler Murray thing to where you just can't make money. I mean, the minor league situation is laughable. And this is something that was starting before Murray, and he's going to be the poster child of this, regardless of what he does. You're not making a living wage playing minor league baseball. So you're playing off of bonus money. And for anyone who's not a first-round pick, that's not substantial enough to sway you. Now, luckily, sports have become so specialized, luckily for baseball, that is, sports become so specialized that guys don't have this choice. But Kyler Murray's about to make a choice where he's willing to put his brain on the line because he can make more money and be more famous and all of this stuff over baseball, which is objectively a safer sport, but doesn't have the same appeal. I think the Roger Sherman joke, he's a writer at The Ringer, he made the joke right when this Murray thing was happening on Monday. We're about to find out how many millions of dollars it will take for a young person to care about baseball. I think it's spot on.
Yeah. It's a great point. On that same cue, before we switch to another sport, the Giants signed a very lucrative deal with Oracle to have that be across that stadium. They're already starting to take down the old AT&T signage. $300, $400 million speculation we're hearing. They got a new GM. Farhan gets in there. They've made almost zero moves. It looks like Buster Posey may or may not even be ready for opening day. What is going on in Giants land? Because I feel like I'm hearing nothing. And pitchers and catchers report in 3 weeks.
Well, let's just think about it objectively here. One, I mean, the entirety of baseball is being held up, so I'm not going to hold it against Farhan or anything like that. Like, as soon as Machado and Harper sign, I think that there will be a bunch of guys who probably sign after that. Now, frankly, they should be signing now, and teams should understand what that value is because they're middle class or lower class citizens comparatively. And let's be honest, anything Bryce Harper does isn't going to raise the market so much to where they're going to be making $5, $10, $20 million more. But that being what it is, and the agents wanting to hold everything up, that's fine. I think that the bigger thing that we have to talk about is the fact that they're not going to blow it up immediately. And maybe that's because Madison Bumgarner is key to their blowing it up model. Maybe it's because they honestly think that they can win 80-something games this year and contend for the playoffs. I know. I'm laughing.
Come on.
I'm just telling you.
I know. You're right, though. You're right.
But, like, they should have blown this thing up 2 years ago. They should have definitely blown it up last year. Let's take this into stock. Bruce Bochy's still the manager of this team. God. Bruce Bochy has 1 year left on his contract. Do we imagine any circumstance whatsoever in which Bruce Bochy is the manager of this team in 2019?
No. Of course not. Or in 2019?
2020.
Right. Like, oh, I'm sorry, 2020.
Yeah, whatever. In 2020. Sure, right. Absolutely not. Right.
So then what the hell are we doing here?
Yeah,
we're treading water. And if you're treading water, that's fine. You know, but the inevitable is coming, and it's going to be blown up. And I agree that you shouldn't trade Madison Bumgarner now because there's not as much of a market as there will be when teams get desperate and they're looking for a workhorse starting pitcher in May, June, July. But this team is about to undergo a radical change. And the problem is, and I don't know if this is necessarily a problem, but it is an issue at the time. The ownership wanted to make money throughout this entire process. So they're going to have to walk a fine line here. And frankly, this has been dragged out longer than it should have. And I think it's going to drag out a little bit longer than that, exacerbated by baseball's overall issues. What a strange time we live in.
Yeah. I think people may have sort of forgotten the reputation Giants ownership earned during the Barry Bonds years, but people should note ownership really hasn't changed that much since that time. Not as much as you think it has based on some shuffling of chairs in that situation. But let's move on to brighter stories like DeMarcus Cousins returning to the basketball floor as we're joined by Dieter Kurtenbach, columnist for the Merck and the Bay Area News Group. And I got to say, and I think this is the review we've heard from most people, last night was about as solid a debut. I mean, short of something truly incredible happening, that was about all you could have asked for from Boogie's return to the floor, wouldn't you say?
1,000%. I mean, anything beyond the 15 minutes that he actually played probably would have been diminishing returns because of his conditioning. Yeah. So the fact that he fouled out might have been a blessing. And that's probably why he was smiling when he was coming off the court. It was jaw-dropping in person. I was down in L.A. for it because I needed to see up close how winded he was and all of this stuff. And I'm not going to lie. I had forgotten over the course of a year, I guess a lot of stuff has happened, but I had forgotten how stupidly talented DeMarcus Cousins is.
Yep.
And we saw it in pretty decent display last night. If that was the baseline, it's over. It's just entirely over. There's no one who can compete with five players of that caliber. Let's throw in Andre Iguodala, who's been playing his ass off. That's six players of an elite caliber. On a nightly basis. It's truly unfair. I can understand what everyone was complaining about. And that, again, is just the baseline. There's a lot of ways that this could go wrong, but I'll say this. You know, the one thing that everyone was so concerned about coming into the year, and I had these concerns as well, is that he would not fit in with this team. That is a concern that needs to be thrown out the window right now. They love this guy. And listen, he is not the easiest guy to get along with. He has a big personality. He hates losing, all this stuff. That locker room absolutely 100% can handle him. And even if it gets worse from here and he doesn't like his role or whatever, they can handle him. He has bought in 100% to what the Warriors have sold him. He wanted to come back a month ago. The Warriors saved him from himself in some ways because he wasn't ready to come back. And he bought in, and he has been a good soldier about it. He has not bitch-whined and complained about that process outside of the little stuff that you pick up and that you're not going to put too much stock into. And he's only going to get better from here.
Yeah.
I'm totally convinced. And last night he was as good as 90% of the centers in the NBA. So what the hell happens when he can actually go for more than 3 minutes a spurt?
Look out.
I mean, are you kidding me?
And not only that, I feel like, I mean, I've been watching this team my whole life, and particularly everybody's been hyper-focusing and hyper-analyzing Steph and KD. How do they play well off each other? What is their demeanor toward each other? How are they talk? I feel like everybody, especially the two top dogs, Steph and KD, are in such a zone right now, and there's such a fluidity to their game. How can Kevin Durant walk away from this at the end of the year? Do you see him bouncing from this?
I don't. I've maintained for a long time that he probably signs another one-year deal because that dude really likes the thought of Chase Center by the fact that he's shown up several times and hasn't gone once. And now Steph is trying to angle himself as Mr. Oakland, whereas KD is Mr. San Francisco. But I think he stays for a year and then he figures it out from there. But and he has the power to do that and more power to him. This Boogie thing is obviously a one-year deal. Boogie is getting everything that he can imagine out of this situation. He's going. I think he made nine figures last night. I just, you know, again, there's a lot of ways this can go wrong. But if that's his baseline, He's a nine-figure player. That is, and that's just bonkers to me. And a lot of the coaches were just beaming after the game, just talking to him. I mean, they were just so happy for him. And that's not something that happens if they don't like the guy and if they don't think that he's put in the hard work. And that just convinced me further that this arrangement has worked out. I don't know where it goes from here. I was shocked at how seamless Boogie fit into the system, considering that the Warriors have never had a center like this. I mean, this is most space on 15 different kinds of steroids. And yeah. I don't even know if that even, like, David Weston, most Spates had a baby. Like, what is this?
I don't think they make the kind of steroids that turn most Spates into DeMarcus Cousins, unfortunately.
NBA yeah, 2K. Listen, that's how you make this guy. It's called create a player, Dieter.
I love most Spates. I will be the number one most Spates stan. Say that five times fast. But the dude's playing in China for a reason.
I don't know, Dieter. I'm not sure you can claim that, because we had someone text us earlier today that they think the Warriors could really use bringing most Spates back from China. So I'm not sure it's fair for you to say.
Last night's game?
They want Stephon Marbury, too, dude. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm believing this, Stephon.
You should see some of the ideas on the text line. It is a regular festival of insanity.
Whoa, nice Freudian slip.
That was a perfect Freudian slip. Before we let you go, because we are right up against the break, but big championship Sunday tomorrow, two-part question. Number one, is this as good of two championship game matchups as you can remember? Because it is for me. And number two, who you get?
Extremely intellectually stimulating, and that's what I look for in the NFL. Give me this weekend over any other weekend. Though that said, Mark Sanchez was in the championship game not too long ago, and I found that intrinsically hilarious. And I guess the Jaguars were too, so that was funny too.
Yeah, that's true.
But by like actual put my brain on standard, this is really good. Give me the Patriots and give me the Rams. I don't like saying it, but give me them both.
Man. I'm sad you had to say it. And
TB12, baby.
I'm sad that's the note on which we have to let you go. I am now outnumbered by two Patriot pickers.
Sarah High School, WCAL, San Mateo. You know, we root for our own over here. Thanks, Dieter.
I love Touchdown Tom. I love everything that the Patriots do. I am not a Patriots hater, but I would like to see Patrick Mahomes for another game, wouldn't you?
I sure would.
Any combination I could take, honestly.
That's the thing about this weekend. Valid. That's what makes it great. Yeah. Dieter, we appreciate the time.
I'm out on Drew Brees. MLM. Down with MLMs. No to Drew Brees.
Wow. I'm so I thought this was going great until the last minute, Dieter. Thank you for your time, man. We appreciate it.
Anytime. Talk soon, guys.
That Good is stuff. Dieter Kurtenbach. Would highly recommend reading his stuff in the San Jose Mercury News or whatever Bay Area News Group paper you're currently subscribing to. It is thoughtful. It is smart. I'm a big fan. One thing he got into that I want to follow up on is this Giants offseason. Look, we don't get to talk as much as we used to, Butcher Boys, so I got to pick your brain, because there were a lot of ways I thought they could go this offseason, and they somehow chose the one thing that I think is totally unacceptable. What is going on with the Giants? Next on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
We probably should have explained this to producer Gabe before the show, but part of the goal of everything we do around here is, in fact, to get people to listen and continue listening. So, again, I have to ask you to turn this awful music off.
Is this Kenny G?
This sounds like a quiet
storm, KKSF.
This sounds like the theme song to a Little Watch 70s sitcom is what it sounds like to me.
Little Girls on the Prairie?
I don't know. It could be anything.
I want to
hear. Nobody watched it. It wasn't on for very long.
Give me the Perfect Strangers intro if you're going to give me some 80s and 70s stuff. I mean, come on. Balki Bartokomus, one of the greatest, most underrated characters of all time. Now we do the Dance of Joy.
I'm not going to argue with that.
He was a great.
There was a great character.
Great character.
We are going to get to the Giants in just a second, because I have to get your Giants nut perspective on this, because just as an outside observer, I'm baffled. Before that, though, Bleacher Dave has waited patiently to address your impending baseball strike issue. What is up, Bleacher Dave?
What's up with two of my favorite radio cats? How
Thank
y'all
you,
been?
Sir.
BD, baby. How you doing?
Man, loving life. Hey, so when I got in the car, you were making it sound like the owners are colluding definitively, and that just the strike was coming. So I'm wondering, I got two questions.
Okay.
So the other leagues use assign a percentage of revenue to the players. What is that for baseball? If you just do the math, salaries to total revenues for the sport, what percentage are baseball players getting? Now that I compare to the other sports. And secondly, is this maybe just the tax, the luxury tax in baseball, working as intended and keeping teams that can afford it from running away from those who can't?
Yeah, but here's the thing, Bleacher Dave. You have teams like the Miami Marlins who are stripping payroll as they're taking public money for a stadium and literally have less invested into the entire 25-man roster than the Yankees outfield. You know what I mean? One guy, as in Giancarlo Stanton. There's a huge discrepancy across the board. And when you're cashing these local checks, there is... I mean, don't you want to be competitive? Don't you want to reinvest it into your team? Part of the greatness that is the Warriors right now is they're taking the money that they're making on and off the court and they're reinvesting it into their scouting. They're reinvesting it into paying a little above the luxury tax. They're trying to build a new stadium. Like, there's more to it than just the salaries. And when we talk about the salaries, not just the opener concept, which is going to start diluting the open market for starting pitching, but now you have platoons becoming more and more prevalent for the everyday players, and that's diluting the everyday pool. Do you get where I'm going with this, Matt?
I do. I think your original question, Dave, was like when we always hear when the NBA and NFL do CBAs, we hear about the revenue split between owners and players.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong. My understanding is that is primarily an issue in those sports because of the salary cap. In other words, the salary cap is set such that revenue is split between owners and players, and everyone gets a little extra cash to make sure that split works out at the end if, say, the players got shorted. I don't think they do that revenue split in baseball in the same way because of the lack of a salary cap and the lack of max contracts, but I could be wrong. But I don't think it's prescribed in the same way. Like in the NFL, I think it's 50-50. Players by law get half the money that comes in, half the revenue, and owners get the other half or some prescribed situation like that. I don't think baseball has that, but I could be wrong.
I just keep going back to the same things. If Bryce Harper, when you're buying out 5, 6, 7 of his prime years, if he can't get fair market value, what other player in the game is going to command a fair value on the open market? Like, this is what every player dreams of. I get my clock started at 19 years old. I'm a superstar. I'm a multiple-time all-star. I'm the face of a particular franchise. I'm going to hit free agency at 26, 27 years old. Everybody around the league needs me to come to their team. I could be chasing the home run record at some point. Like, there's so many different angles to take if I'm a team, even if I'm just... You know, Miami Marlins, who I've been using as an example, you're telling me he wouldn't instantly boost their Q rating, boost their attendance, give them something to care about? Like the Giants, the A's, whoever it is, every team can make an argument for why they would want a Bryce Harper on their roster to sell to their fan base on top of winning.
Yeah. And I mean, you don't have to go to A-Rod's contract. In 2014, Mike Trout, who admittedly, better than Bryce Harper.
Yeah, and they were buying out his arbitration years.
But that's the point. They were buying out his arbitration years. They didn't have to pay him anything.
And what'd they give him?
They gave him $144.5 million over 6 years from age 22 with only 2 years of MLB service. It seems like Bryce Harper can't get that now.
It's crazy.
In his prime. And that is a reflection, to answer Dave's other question, of... And I don't know that we said they're colluding outright or that there's proof of collusion, but it certainly suggests that the market has not developed the way you'd expect.
Absolutely. Look at last offseason. How many teams were lining up to pay for the services of Giancarlo Stanton making $300 million? Where are those teams this year looking for a younger, better defensive version in Bryce Harper? Who's even more marketable to teams. He's the face of Under Armour baseball. I this doesn't make any sense to me.
And part of the problem is baseball has lost view of marketability entirely. just across the board.
Look who the most popular baseball players are. It's the guys who do the post game.
That's right.
A-Rod, Big Poppy,
I've been making that point all year long. The baseball players with the highest Q ratings are all retired.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
Exactly. So, like, last offseason, right, it was St. Louis, it was the Dodgers, it was the Giants, it was the Yankees, all involved in the Giancarlo Stanton sweepstakes. Not only did you have to take on his $300 million, you had to part with prospects.
Right.
Yet this offseason, Bryce Harper, admittedly...
Can't get half of that.
Admittedly, a better defensive player... Can
not
run
as
the bases
good on
better,
offense, but you know,
comparable.
So, let's say he's a little worse.
Okay.
He can't get 150.
That's what I'm saying.
If he couldn't get 300, fine. But he got 225. Okay, we're okay. But he's not even getting that. And it just, even if there's not outright collusion, it just smells wrong.
Something doesn't add up. And look. I bring all of this up because I'm watching this obsession with where Anthony Davis is going to land. Where's Jimmy Butler going to land? Jimmy Butler compared to Bryce Harper as far as like importance to the sport. I mean, I like Jimmy Butler. He's a really good player. He's nowhere near as important to his sport as Bryce Harper is to baseball.
Not at all.
So like what? How is this not a bigger deal?
It's weird. It's weird. And Machado, again, and there's reasons to knock both guys, which is part of why I think they're getting away with it. And so many people don't believe it's collusion is people are like, well, Bryce Harper didn't hit last year and Bryce Harper's not consistent at the plate. And Manny Machado is nobody likes him. And that's all well and good. None of that stuff has ever stopped owners in the past.
Thank you.
And that's the issue is it smells funny because we've watched these guys operate our whole lives,
yep.
And this isn't how they operate.
Do you know what the biggest move of Major League Baseball is this offseason?
Is it Jurickson Profar to the A's?
Actually, it's a really underrated move. No, it's got to be the Goldschmidt trade, and that's it. That's literally the only player movement. I know Familia's gone from the A's. Jed Lowry obviously signed. They traded for Profar, which is actually a really shrewd trade. But that's it. Like, you can count the moves baseball has made on one hand. That's unacceptable. Pitchers and catchers are reporting. Adam Jones is a great example. Older player, okay? Andrew McCutchen got a 3-year, $50 million deal from the Phillies, and Adam Jones is just sitting there? How? How is this even possible?
Yeah, which brings us to the thing I really wanted to address with you all day today. Coming into the offseason, after two ugly losing seasons, this San Francisco Giants team went out and hired a guy who I think both of us and a lot of people in the Bay, when they hired him, our reaction was, you know what? It's about time they hired a guy who's going to make the big boy decisions and rebuild this thing and sort of do it in a right-minded fashion. My theory was I wouldn't do it, but I could see them tripling down, going after someone like Bryce Harper, trying to spend more money and compete in 2019. I could also see them, and in fact would have supported them, trading Madison Bumgarner, finding a trade partner for Brandon Belt, hell, even trading Buster Posey. The one thing they couldn't do in my mind is nothing.
Which is exactly what they've done.
Which, I gotta say, and I know, you know, we had Dieter Kurtenbach on, and he made the point that everyone in baseball is kind of waiting for the Machado and Harper things to play out, and I get it. And others have made the point that Farhan is going to make smart, responsible decisions on his own time frame with his own reasons, and he's not going to make a deal just to get a deal done early in the offseason. But how could you not be worried at this point, having done, again, literal zero?
It's mind-boggling to me. It really is, and it drives me crazy because here's a great example. We've been moving the bars on this Giants thing for 2 years now. Last year, it was this. You can't trade Bumgarner till the deadline.
Right.
That's when you'll get the most value. Then he gets hurt. He comes back, and they go, you know when you can get the most value?
Off-season.
In the offseason, at the winter meetings. And now we're at the winter meetings. It's passed, and they go, oh, now the value is in midseason. That's when teams get desperate. No, that's when they're looking for a rental, and you're going to get a fraction of what you could have got. Now I'm of the nature, I've moved a whole 360 on this Bumgarner thing. I'm back to where I was at the beginning. Keep him. Because you're not going to get much for him at this point because you've been waiting and dragging your feet. Here's where it's the little moves, Matt. I don't want to see Joe Panik play second base for the San Francisco Giants anymore. Alan Hansen deserves that opportunity to play second base or bring in LeMahieu or one of these other guys that's out there that's sitting there that can be a contributor. Jet Lowry, I know he's an older guy. You've been paying for older guys for 10 years straight and you didn't even sniff around on Jet Lowry. I know his second half was dreadful. I know that. I'm just saying, like, you need to upgrade the Brandon Belt thing. I cannot go to spring training again with him as my opening day first baseman. I just can't do it.
And you know, you could go through the roster and list 15 things like that, and realistically, you weren't going to fix all 15 things that you don't want to watch again.
Yes.
But
one of them's got to move.
What you really can't have is Brandon Belt and Joe Panik and Evan Longoria and Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner. And what is going on in the outfield right now?
Gorky's
Are you
left.
About to have Gorky's just gone?
He's gone. He signed with someone else.
Oh my
Your
goodness.
Best player. Your best player.
Are you about to re-sign Hunter Pence? Where is this heading? Because at a certain point, you got to have guys.
I know.
And they don't have guys in the minors to bring up.
No.
So what's going on?
Chris Shaw, come on down.
If this is going to be Chris Shaw, Mack Williamson, and Austin Slater, like, this is not going to be good.
Aramis Garcia, I thought, deserved some at-bats. And I know that sounds absolutely crazy. But where was he last year?
You know what, though? It's one thing to have some of that stuff going on when you've got stuff coming down the pipeline.
Yeah.
What do the Giants have?
I don't know. You want to know a doomsday scenario?
Joey Bart and Elio Ramos. That's all I know about.
Do you want to hear the doomsday scenario? Your opening day San Francisco Giant lineup here at Oracle Park. On the mound, the opener, Mark Melancon.
Oh, God.
Would you go nuts if that? And then they go through the lineup, batting leadoff, Brandon Belt. You know, it's like, oh my God, I'd be pulling my hair out.
And Bochy's still managing it. So you're just not doing any. Look, whether or not any of the guys you've come to know and love over the World Series runs are going to remain on the team is up for debate. But here's one thing for sure. This group, without major changes, ain't going nowhere. So what are we doing? What are we doing? Do something.
I agree. Do something. And standing pat means you're only getting worse and worse and worse.
And you're not
developing the future.
Right. You're not moving the successful future closer. It's
exactly.
One thing to get worse if you're moving a successful future closer.
Well, one thing that, like, Warrior fans are starting to come to grips with, and you brought this up with me weeks back, at some point you're going to have to part with some of the guys you love. And that's the nature of sports, the Bill Walsh theory, right?
Yeah.
Get rid of a guy a year earlier. Guess what, Giants fans? You have just gone through two seasons that were worse than any other two seasons in the last, since what, 1985, when they lost 100 games?
Around there, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's they have to do something. And standing pat and doing nothing and then rolling and trotting out the same aging group of guys, it does nothing for me. It does absolutely. Here's just something, and I was asking my buddy, I said, the Joey Bart thing. What do you think's going to happen with Joey Bart? He says, probably knowing how the Giants operate, he'll start in AA. And I said, even if Buster Posey's hurt because he's had reconstructive, you know, replacement hip surgery or whatever it was. And he said, dude, he could go to the bigs right now, and he might struggle, bat 240, 250, but he's got the power. And I said, well, throw him in the lineup. Let him learn on the fly. If the catching position for an offensive catcher is very short and there's only a small window, it's going to be like a running back in the NFL, right? I want to maximize the value I can bring to the big league club, and I want to see this guy on the big league team. I don't want him catching some archaic 1,000 innings in the minors and exposing him to the nicks and the dings that got Buster Posey to the point where he is right now.
By the way, that diminished Buster Posey's power bat so much that he never became one.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
And
that's a great point.
I think Joey Bart comes in as a better power prospect than Posey
He's
ever
a bigger
was.
Dude.
But nevertheless, Posey, he was a power prospect.
Exactly.
He was.
Well, and going back to if you don't get rid of some guys, like, open up first base. You got like five or six guys that are going to need. Longoria is not a third baseman anymore. He's a spot third baseman, first baseman.
Well, one of the most encouraging things I've seen this offseason is the recent reports that they are trying to trade Evan Longoria right now. It's going to be
good
tough.
Luck with that $70 million hanging.
Well, they'll have to pick up the money, but
yeah.
Who cares? That's fine.
Yeah,
you don't mind them picking up the money if they can get something out of it and open up that spot at third base.
Yes,
that would be great.
Quietly. Pablo played as good, if not better, than Longoria while he was in there. And that, if you watch the games every night, it was like,
Longoria had like 15 errors at third base.
Look, I don't want Pablo as the starting third baseman
either. But that's the barometer.
Right. That happened last year.
I know.
That's a real thing. Last year was, that's one where I'll still defend them.
It was the worst case scenario.
There was no way to see that level of collapse coming from Evan Longoria. It just, there was no reason to expect that.
Well, and
there just wasn't.
We're forgetting about a lot of things, but I will give them one thing. If you trot out Bumgarner, Derek Rodriguez, that is a good top of the rotation. Derek Rodriguez is legit. Movement, elite fastball, yeah. He's mature, he knows how to work behind in the count. He can come in with the breaking ball first and then get you out with the hard stuff. I mean, he's a legit front-end starter. Well, is he the ace? No, but he's good.
Well, that's why I even though I said I wouldn't do it, and it wouldn't have been my choice, would have talked about how it was the wrong choice on the air, at least it would have been something if they had said, you know what, we got Bumgarner, we got Rodriguez, yeah. Samardzija eats innings, Cueto will be back midseason. If we just add a couple bats, we can compete. I would have disagreed, but at least you've got a philosophy.
Exactly. Let me throw you one on Samardzija, because you brought something up. My buddy brought this up. Do you know who screams opener? Samardzija.
That's a great call.
He does, though. And if he's not the opener, he actually screams fourth through sixth inning, doesn't he? Multiple times a week. You got to get some value out of that money.
I've said forever he should be a reliever.
I agree. But don't you think that now that's a role you have to explore with him?
In theory, that makes a ton of sense. In practice, you need him to start right now, because who do you got?
Suarez, Derek Rodriguez.
Rodriguez, Bumgarner.
Suarez,
I guess. Suarez, Block. Like it's gonna have to be. It's gonna have to be Samardzija. and again, I have to imagine they've had an offer.
Yeah.
To get multiple potential future starting pitchers for guys who aren't doing anything for him right now. Maybe you're talking about a future third starter for Brandon Belt.
That's fine.
Exactly.
You got to round out the rotation.
Who cares? Because what good does it do to keep Brandon Belt right now? And that's from someone who, I like Brandon Belt as a player.
Yeah.
It's not that he's not good or brings no value. It's just, where are you going with this?
Exactly. You're at the point of no return. And at some point.
Well, you were at the point of no return a year and a half ago.
But they're afraid, like, oh, he's going to go off in Colorado. Like, so be it. Yes, exactly. It's best for both parties to amicably part ways. Here's a guy that they need to get something out of, whether it's in a trade or they need to have an impact this spring training. Tyler Beede.
Yeah.
You invested a huge pick in him. You expected him to be a front of the rotation type of a pitcher, and I just did not see it from him. I didn't see the makeup emotionally. I didn't see the repertoire, the stuff. I don't know what he is. Because Stratton was a big miss, you know, and he had his moments, but he's nothing special. They need pitching.
By the way, both the A's and Giants mentioned in the potential Sonny Gray sweepstakes headed to Cincinnati.
Is that where he's going to go?
Yes, Yankees finalizing a deal with the Cincinnati Reds for a package that includes one of their high prospects.
So here's a name for both the Giants and the A's that I really like. Gio Gonzalez. He had a really solid year. I know the numbers. You're going to look at the numbers without context and say they're very similar to Sonny Gray's. He was one of Washington's best pitchers. I know they have Scherzer. I love Scherzer. He was really good. And as a fourth or fifth starter, you could do a lot worse than Gio Gonzalez.
Yeah, the Gray thing and the Gio thing, for that matter, makes some sense to me for the A's.
Yeah.
Because the A's are a team that, if you're talking about Sonny Gray in a positive scenario, because there are negative ones, but Sonny Gray or Gio Gonzalez coming over and making a 3-win difference versus the replacement starter, a 5-win difference versus the guy that the A's would otherwise have, that 3 or 5 games could be meaningful to the A's.
It could be a 5-game series as opposed to a wild card.
Exactly. For the Giants, it means nothing. So no. I don't know why they were in on any sort of Sonny Gray sweepstakes to bring on a 28-year-old, whatever it was, to try to add a 28-year-old who hasn't been good in 4 years. It's like you want to relive the Tim Lincecum experience. I don't understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
But the A's, both of those names are interesting to me. Gio would be interesting.
You brought up Profar, and I dug deep on Profar because I kind of ripped the A's for not bringing back
Lowry. He's a young Jed Lowry.
He had 20-something jacks last year, 70-something RBIs. He was a former first-round pick.
He's a rich man's young Jed Lowry.
That's a good
call. Like, early Jed Lowry, no average, surprising power, decent defender. Profar's a better defender, a better athlete, more power. There's a chance he hits 240, but...
And he's got only 1 year under his belt, so you're assuming, like, full season. You're assuming he could maybe take a step forward.
But the reason for that is because he's been hurt and inconsistent. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see, but I do think people who, you know, the A's fans who for good reason became attached to Jed Lowry, picture Jed Lowry as
the first 2 months
first
of the
half
year.
2018 Jed Lowry. And in reality, that's not who he is most of the time.
But he was an extra base hit machine.
He was great for those couple of months.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'll say this, though. Chapman and Olsen were bad at the beginning of last season at the plate.
Look at their numbers.
So at the plate, at the beginning of the year, they were bad last
year. But I'm saying like the totality.
But this is my point. Woo! If those guys start off the way we know they can play, you won't miss Jed Lowry.
Are they going to bring back Edwin? Because he was, I thought.
I think they will end up bringing back Edwin.
They
because
got fire
surprisingly,
up.
He doesn't seem to be drawing attention. Although, who knows? Because nobody is.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem with baseball. No one's been signed anywhere. We don't know what's going on. Before we run out of time, we got pretty deep into the Patriots-Chiefs matchup earlier. I want to pick your brain about the NFC one before we go. We talked Drew Brees' historical perspective, but forget career. Just on the strength of what he's done this season, I think pretty clearly Patrick Mahomes was the best quarterback in the league this year. Drew Brees was significantly better than anyone else.
Yeah, he was really good. And Alvin Kamara is the best version that I thought Reggie Bush was going to be.
That's a good call.
Catches the ball near the boundary, strong, can cut, juke guys. Like, I thought Reggie was going to put on some weight. And
chance to go house any
every
play.
Every time he touches it.
Yep.
Now, Michael Thomas is unguardable.
There has been this
power slant.
Michael Thomas is really the best receiver in the NFL thing that I think is total crap.
What do you mean?
That's something everyone has liked to say over the last 2 weeks. Forget Julio. Forget these
DeAndre
other guys.
Hopkins.
Look at what Michael Thomas is clearly the actual bet. No, he's not. He is very good.
He's really good.
He is very good. And I think what makes him, what stands out from some of those other guys is he has an, I'll call it Anquan Boldin-esque consistency about him.
That's a good way to put it.
Julio and Hopkins do things.
Oh, the catch radius.
That those two guys in particular, DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones, do things that I'm not sure I've seen anybody besides Calvin Johnson do.
Yeah.
Where it's just like the size, the body control.
Odell, I put in that.
Odell,
I put
Odell's
in that category
in
too. Although the health is always a concern.
But he's a little smaller.
Yes, but he's wide open. I watched him in the New York Giants, wide open every play.
He gets open even better than Hopkins and Jones
play.
Do. But just in terms of contorting their body, making ridiculous catches. There's something about those couple of top guys, but if you just want someone to run the perfect route every time and catch the damn ball, Michael Thomas is as good as it gets.
So the other guy that I really like for New Orleans is a local guy because he played at Berkeley. It's Cam Jordan. And he's a four-time Pro Bowler.
One of the least known defensive superstars in football,
exactly.
I would say.
Exactly. And I asked the Saints guy we had on, the play-by-play guy, you know, is he – I always think of the Dome Patrol, the four linebackers they had. But as far as defensive line, I think of Will Smith, and I think of him as far as the greatest defensive lineman in New Orleans history. He goes, oh, he's by far the best defensive lineman they've ever had in their history. And so he's the leader emotionally for that defense. Can they stop the run? Because, I mean, you have a rookie. I call him a rookie. He's a third-year, fourth-year quarterback in Goff. He's still relatively young, going into a hostile environment against that coach and that quarterback combination. Can they establish the run? I'm going to be very interested to see. And then Brandon Cooks, if he can catch a PI deep or catch a deep ball, does that help stretch the field to open things up for Todd Gurley on the outside?
The old PI offense,
that's
man.
How he, but he draws them, it seems like, every game.
He does draw them. He also seems to make one big play.
He does.
In a lot of games.
Robert
gotta give
Woods.
Brandon Cooks credit. Woods has been
so much better than I gave him credit for.
Not me. I'm the dude who's had Robert Woods on his fantasy
really?
Team since way back in the Buffalo days, man.
Yeah,
Robert Woods is a consistent producer. All he does, he reminds me of those great possession receivers like the Bobby Ingrams of the world.
Ooh, good call.
He runs perfect routes and catches the ball. Again, he's not the star Michael Thomas is, but it's a similar situation where just like he's a pro. He's in the right spot, and if he puts his hands on it, he's catching it.
I think we obsess too much with the stars. Are you solid? Are you contributing? Are you balling? You know what I mean? Like, and so I'm going to lean
solid in football more than in any other sport. Being solid is the most important thing.
Exactly.
Do your job, as Bill Belichick likes to say.
I love that. Aaron Donald, man, can he make a big turnover? Can he make a big play? You know,
so one of the things that's interesting, the Saints defense overall, I love to go to DVOA for these things.
Okay.
For people who don't know, Football Outsiders is a stats-based football analysis group, and they do a thing called DVOA, which is basically, it stands for defense-adjusted value over average. But what it basically does is it gives you an idea of how good various units of football teams are adjusted for who they've played over the course of the season, you know, for competition and also for currency, recency bias. Like, how are they playing now?
Yeah.
And at the end of the season, the New Orleans defense overall weighted was ranked sixth. Their pass defense was 22nd and their rush defense was third. Which is one of the reasons I'm all over the Saints in this game, is I think they will not bottle up, because that's awful difficult if it's even possible. But if you look at Todd Gurley's last five games, I think three of them he's been 55 yards or under.
Yeah, he was dinged up too for a while.
He was dinged up, and one of those games was against the Bears.
Yeah.
So like that.
That's a good. In
Todd
the cold,
Gurley's great. Don't get me wrong. Okay, Todd Gurley is a great player. But the Saints' defensive strength, contrary to what people might think from hearing the name Marshawn Lattimore over and over
again. He makes plays.
He does, but the defensive strength of the Saints is the run defense.
Yes.
And that is the better matchup for them here, in my mind. The run defense doing something to slow down Gurley and then make Goff try to beat you.
Yeah.
And that's when guys like Marshawn Lattimore have a chance to make plays, is when guys like Jared Goff have to drop back and throw it a whole bunch.
And he made plays in the first half against Dallas, but if you saw the second half, he was erratic.
You can beat him.
Yeah, I think so too. I lean New Orleans. I don't have a strong opinion because I've watched a lot of the Rams this year, so I feel like I know them better, and I know both what they do really well and where they're deficient. The guy, Littleton,
yeah,
is a very important piece in this game. Littleton makes plays. I love Aaron Donald. I'm obsessed with him. And Sue has only had a couple of really good games. One of them was last week. Can he back that up again this week and take some pressure off of Aaron Donald? I'm excited for both of these games.
Yeah, and sort of to that point, is, you know, we talk about the interplay with Sue and Donald on the line. The interplay with their corners is just as important.
Oh, yeah.
Marcus Peters was a train wreck when Aqib Talib wasn't on the field this year. He got absolutely crushed again and again when Aqib Talib was off the field. When Aqib Talib was on the field, they were almost impossible to throw on. Yeah. So, and actually, I saw an interesting stat. The sample is much smaller, but they were almost as bad with just Talib as they were with just Peters. So it seems to be that their skills combine in a way that gives you a complete set of corners, but individually, neither of them are quite as good. And look, they're both here now, but they're also playing Drew Brees and Michael Thomas. So it's strength against strength here in some ways, and that is pretty exciting.
One last nuance. Do you lean ex-Raider coach Dennis Allen on defense, or who do you give the edge to, him or Wade Phillips?
I just like the idea that someone said a couple days ago, I heard someone say that Dennis Allen has grown that goatee so that nobody remembers he's the guy that coached the Raiders a couple years ago. He's just trying to make sure no one remembers that happened. I'll tell you what.
He's done a good job.
And he did it. That's how he got the Raiders' job, is by being one of the better defensive coordinators in the league. I think what we've learned over the last 3 years, or at least certainly the lesson NFL teams are taking, don't hire a defensive head coach.
Yeah, well, that's...
Unless he's Vic Fangio.
Yeah.
Don't hire a defensive head coach.
I actually really like that hire because everyone else is zigging and Denver's going to zag and go with their strength. I kind of like that.
That's fine. Here's the thing, and this is something that our 2 o'clock hour guest, Robert Mays, this is one of his big things that we are very much in lockstep about. And this is specific to today's NFL, but frankly, we've seen it the last couple of years. Here's the reason you're better off hiring some dude that ate lunch with Sean McVay than Vic Fangio, who you know is one of the best defensive coaches in the league. is it's a league about offense. And if the Broncos' offense is good this year, they'll lose their coordinator.
Yeah, they'll get poached. That, I call that the Alex Smith theory, because I've been having this theory since Alex Smith was the quarterback for the Niners. And my boy, Mike Nolan, went through a revolving door.
Mike Nolan.
Oh, I can't stand him. Revolving door of coordinators.
Look, I like a man in a suit, and I won't apologize for
him. Him and Del Rio wore suits. Reebok-branded suits.
They had to be Reebok.
I mean, geez, yeah. Louise, Mike Nolan. Your dad coached us? We'll bring you in, even though you've only had 1 year of defensive coordinator job in Baltimore. And we'll let you pick the quarterback, even though you have nothing to do with the offense.
Suits, though.
Winning with class.
Oh, my goodness. You had to hit me with that.
Sorry.
I love it.
By the way, we made it 3 hours and 52 minutes without reminding you poor souls out there that it's the anniversary of the Tuck Rule.
Wow. What might have happened had the Raiders won that game?
Totally changes the history of the NFL.
Of the Raiders, of Tom Brady, of everything. Belichick.
The entire history of the NFL.
Vinatieri. I mean, Charles Woodson, Gannon. Think of how many career arcs have changed.
Oh, man. What a sad day. It was clearly a fumble.
Oh, my God. Totally a fumble. And C. Wood made the play of his life on that, right?
Just Hall of Fame player making a Hall of Fame play. A team on their way and just screwed.
Totally screwed. And the worst part about it was a slow death, like Saving Private Ryan, where the guy's getting stabbed slowly in the chest. Then not only do they kick the field goal to tie it, then it's overtime, and then they march down the field on you and do it again. And Vinatieri hooks in. He hits like a draw kick to nail both of those field goals.
Oh, you mean Skinny Santa?
Skinny Santa. He looked so old last week. I couldn't get over it.
He got to retire, right?
I feel bad. When you miss the shortest of your career,
that's got to be the worst conclusion to a Hall of Fame career of all time.
I would have said Buckner, but I guess you're right, because Buckner didn't get into the Hall of Fame. He was damn good, though. But yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah, Marino dying. I mean, a lot of quarterbacks went out ugly with concussions, but that was a brutal end. We ran all the way out of time. It's been a pleasure, my friend.
Have a good one. Enjoy Super Bowls, or Super Bowl, Championship Sunday.
Big Championship Sunday. Kittle and Urban are next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.